A special podcast for a very special race for a very special anniversary. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Hey everybody, welcome to episode 445 of Motorsport 101. I am your friendly neighborhood host, Dre Harrison, and I've been delightfully informed by our stats department, and by stats department I mean Jason, that this is my 400th appearance on the Motorsport 101 podcast. Go me. That is terrifying that I've now done 400 of these.
Dre, will you turn in your school project already?
I know it's like 9 years overdue, but do you think I can still get a first on this? I'm not sure personally, but we'll have to see how the marking process goes for it. I'm not sure Turnitin will accept a project that's 9 years over, but it's worth a shot, right? But yes, this is my 400th show. Thanks to everyone that stuck around for all these years. It's still a genuine pleasure to be able to do this with the most incredibly talented colleagues I could ever wish to work for and work with. It's a genuine honor, and thank you to everyone that's been listening for all these years. I mean, like I said, we're coming up to 9 years in October, which is wild to say the least. So yeah, cheers everybody for that. And once again, I'm in the fine company, as you can probably already tell, Cam Buckley, who is the check has come through, the bribe has been confirmed. We are doing an Amon preview, so Cam, how's it going over there?
You know, just the wires connected in my head. I'm pretty sure this is like year number five that I've been here.
Yeah.
Because I first rolled around here for the 2019 Le Mans special. It's been fun. You know, had some good times, had some bad times. Had some times where I've wanted to hit RJ with a steel chair. But
it's part of the experience.
it really is. And you know, of course, an incredibly special occasion this time, where we are on the 100th year since the first 24 hours of Le Mans. And special not just for the centenary reasons, but it's the big return of big manufacturer support to the top class. Toyota are no longer alone. In fact, we've got a bevy of manufacturers from all over the world, all coming in vying for overall honors. It's going to be a fun one.
It's going to be a very fun one. And, well, what more can we say besides, one, this is awesome, and two, our other co-presenter, Mr. RJ O'Connell, is actually reporting to us from Le Mans itself, which is, I guess this is the way of knowing that we've made it. We've actually got a journo out there covering
it. Boots on the ground, baby.
Boots on the ground, asses in seats, or in this case, bunk beds. It's RJ O'Connell. How you doing, big man?
Hi. I should explain myself. First of all, do I sound okay? I am recording this from a house in the town of Arnage nearby Circuit de la Sarthe in Le Mans. So it's about a 10-minute drive to the circuit without traffic. A wonderful gentleman by the name of Mark, who works at Orica, who, of course, construct every LMP2 chassis in this field. They consult with the development of the Ferrari 296 GT3, which you'll see in this race next year. They built a lot. Mark and his family were nice enough to have the entire crew of DSC over to stay with us, which includes me staying in a garage with two sets of bunk beds. So I'm in close proximity with my deputy editor, Stephen Kilby, who's been on the show before, and photographers Peter May and David Lord. I got to tell you, I have never spent so much intimate company in the presence of heterosexual British men. this is a lot to take in, but yeah, we made it because you only get to experience the 100th anniversary, the Le Mans centenary, once.
I also love that we've already got jokes in the chat from Jason regarding the fact that we have a very special starter for this very special race. LeBron James.
That's right.
Is going to be starting the Le Mans centenary.
which is funny because I heard from my host that there were down to two options, LeBron and French President Emmanuel Macron.
Well, is Macron going to drop 40 on one foot?
No, of course not. And it's not like the president of the ACO has a brother that ran for president or anything.
Well, I mean, it's not like LeBron's doing anything. I mean, he's on vacation.
Yeah, he's normally playing basketball around this time, but unfortunately something came up. It was the Denver Nuggets.
Dude, it's crazy, though. He has the chance to do something even funnier than Tony Parker when he waved the flag for the Lamar virtual in front of a green screen.
just wave the flag, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a hell of a get. I mean, you got arguably one of, if not the most recognizable athlete in the world to start your race. That's pretty frigging cool. But as you could probably guess by now, yes, we are previewing the 2023 centenary year of the 24 Hours of Le Mans here on Motorsport 101, and I couldn't be in the company of two fine people to break this down. So we'll be talking all about, as Cam said, like, and this is something given that he's been here 5 years now, I don't think you'd ever imagine the amount of factory support that is back in this sport since then. It's about damn time. It's genuine. We've got some genuine excitement in the house. Without further ado, let's quickly get into the housekeeper before we get started. Please, you can find us real quick. We're on YouTube, Facebook, Motorsport 101, Twitter at Motorsport_101, our personal handles on Twitter at Dre_WTF1, at RJ O'Connell, and at CBuckley917, our podcast itself, Motorsport_101, Instagram page, Motorsport 101 Pod, and our website, Motorsport101.com, for all of our content as ever, including DRR reviews of Spain, I should say. God, like that was a fast week. The Spanish Grand Prix and IndyCars. Brand new Detroit Grand Prix, which we'll also be covering later on this week. Me and Cam will be back for that one, so do check that out already. And if you're in luck, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/Motorsport101. All the details are on there. Gentlemen, should we do this?
We shall.
Let's do it. It can't be worse than opening the fridge full of stinky cheese again.
So, let's open that fridge, ignore the Camembert, and let's get into the centenary year.
Why would you do that again?
The centenary year of the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Welcome to the Le Mans Centenary, the biggest top-class field in 12 years, the first proper Le Mans of the hypercar era, 100 years on from the inaugural running. It's been sold out for months, and after Sunday's test, it seems like a sudden and unexpected balance of performance tweak has put at least four, maybe five, of the big manufacturers close together on one-lap pace. But one lap speed or even full stint speed only goes so far in a 24-hour race where anything can happen. I mean, Cam, before we get into it real quick, because remember, every podcast is someone's first, what exactly was done to balance the books of the field here a little bit?
Well, it was kind of unexpected for a reason, in that the ACO explicitly stated that the BOP was set from the start of the season until after Le Mans. They didn't do that.
Whoops.
And the biggest change, the change that really was necessary, but I don't know if I particularly agree with the way they've gone about it, is, well, they shot Toyota in the knee. They're carrying an extra 37 kilos of ballast. Ferrari got additional weight as well. Porsche got a couple extra kilograms, but nothing of significance, as did Cadillac. And it's, the purpose of this is to try and bring everyone a little closer. I mean, we've had kind of a fairly set grid so far, where you've got Toyota way out ahead of everyone, which is what you'd expect.
Yep.
This car has been running since 2021. It got a big upgrade this year. They're the only ones with real continuity all the way back to 2012. They've been running every year at Le Mans. And they've got the car that's got the most mileage, the most time, the most refinement, and a pretty damn solid set of drivers.
Oh, yeah.
And then you've got Ferrari, who This is their first official prototype since the mid-1970s. Sadly, the 333 SP of the 90s has been retconned from Ferrari lore. Great car. And they're coming in off of the back of AF Corsa, who have been running GT Ferraris here, again, for over a decade. They know this place. They love this place. They've been very successful. And kind of a who's who of both Ferrari GT drivers and, as some would call them, Formula One rejects. They've shown pace thus far this year, but not much else. And then it's kind of everyone else. You've got the LMDHs with Porsche and Cadillac, who have been kind of in a second-class citizens under the regulations so far. You've got Peugeot, who...
More on them later.
More on them. We'll go in depth each team by team. But really, it's been those two, Toyota, then Ferrari, then everyone else thus far. And then way behind everyone else, Glickenhaus and Vanwall, but that's kind of expected. This BOP change is really there to try and compress this grid a little bit. Now, I don't think we've seen what these cars can really do over a lap. We've had the test day. We're barely under the 3-minute 30s. Pole last year was a 3:24.
Right.
There's more to come from everybody. But that's the purpose. That's the idea of this BOP change.
Sure. So let's break down all the big name runners and riders. First and foremost, let's get into the, I think it's fair to say, the favorites going into this 100th centenary year. Toyota. Two cars as ever in the number seven, lucky seven, Mr. Conweezy, Mike Conway. Jose Maria Lopez, and as I like to call him on this show now, Coach K, the much more fun and exciting Coach K, Kamui Kobayashi. And
of course, lap record holder at this place, the current layout of the track, and generally bad fast.
Absolutely. And also, by the time you listen to this, newest NASCAR Cup Series ringer, he'll be at Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Looking forward to that. That's going to be fun. Okay. Also, in the number eight car, we have the unifier of Japanese motorsport in many senses, Sebastian Buemi. We have that guy that was in F1 that one time, Brendan Hartley, who we all know is far better than what his F1 career ever suggested.
Without doubt.
And as capital letters, RJ, I'll let you introduce the last person. It's only fair given you wrote it.
The boy from Cure. The 2017 Super GT champion, the 2022 World Endurance Drivers champion, the 2022 Le Mans winner on debut with the Toyota squad, Ryo Hirakawa. God, that kid is so much fun to watch drive. But yeah, Toyota's won five in a row, but the naysayers will always tell you it's been against reduced competition. So surely a win this year would silence the narratives, at least if the balance of performance nerf hasn't overcorrected. I think operationally, like regardless of whether they've lost about a second and a half per lap or whatever they're claiming this change has done, operationally, they're still the best drilled team. They have the most continuity and they have the experience of having done it before. This is the most important Le Mans that Toyota has run in a long, long time, because this is the most competition that they've ever faced. And I still feel confident that they can get the job done with either one of their lineups, to be frankful.
Well, you'd have to hope, because if they don't win, given how the cards are stacked, it would be cataclysmically embarrassing. As I said before, this car has been running since 2021, way longer than everyone else's. No, I don't count the SCG 007. They've got really solid hands everywhere. But in those years, and ever since they started their winning streak, really only last year did they put together a clean Le Mans. I mean, 2021 was a shit show with their fuel cells on debut with this car. And not so much their fault as it was FIA metering equipment. Where have I heard that one before? Hello, 2014.
Hi, Daniel.
they haven't been perfect this year either. They've been better than everyone else on reliability, but that's because the bar is resting somewhere, somewhere below the Peugeot's top speed down the Mulsanne. Really, I think RJ kind of hit the nail on the head. I'm not expecting anyone to have a clean Le Mans this year because the temperatures are so high and because we've seen everyone have imperfect armor, let's say. But I do think that Toyota's operational continuity sets them apart from everyone else. They've been at this the longest out of everyone, not on a brand level, but on a, you know, this team has been here since 2012 in one form or another. And they've also been equipped with the ability to basically just go and test and keep testing and then test some more. And so they have just way more miles on their car than everyone else. If something does go wrong, they're going to know how to fix it and fix it efficiently.
Yeah.
They've got to be the favorites just on that continuity alone. And that's before you get to the fact that their car has been dick flattening everyone up to this point this year.
Yeah.
Before the BOP change. And even with that BOP change.
Yeah.
Do we really think they're like fourth fastest from the test day? I don't think so.
I was going to say, how significant they were, is 37 kilos?
It's about 80 pounds. It's enough to peg them back just a little bit.
It's enough to peg them back on pace a little bit, but then they had that pace to spare. What I'm much more curious about is that carrying an extra 80 or so pounds for 24 hours, that affects components. And that's going to go for anyone who got extra weight. That's going to go for Ferrari as well.
Good point.
So on pace, on continuity, Toyota are the favorites. But there are variables that everyone's going to have to deal with. You know, first you have to beat the race and then, you know, you see where you are. Maybe you win.
So, we think Toyota are favorites going in, likely, you know, operational excellence, you know, the experience almost certainly comes in handy. We don't think the extra 80 pounds is going to be too big a factor for now, but we'll have to wait and see how that plays out once
actually get into the nitty-gritty. Without a doubt. I think Toyota, you know, there's been like this whole thing of, oh, Toyota should have stepped away when everybody else did. No, it's not. Why should they have to bear the burden of everybody else's mistakes? And also one other note before we move on to our next manufacturer. If Sebastian Buemi wins it this year, he'll be in an elite company of people who won this race five times. I mean, it's a pretty good list of names. Emanuele Pirro, Frank Bila, Derek Bell, Jackie Itz, and Tom Christensen.
It's a good club.
And he's still a year older than me. Fuck me, I am getting so old.
Well, I was gonna say, like it's not gonna be a Le Mans broadcast until we see the inside of Tom Christensen's man cave again at some point during the 24 hours, because that's a highlight of my viewing experience, let me tell you. Right, let's talk about Maranello and the prancing horse.
And now, for once, we don't have to come crashing down on them, laughing at them relentlessly.
No, we'll save that for later when we talk about Charles Leclerc finishing 11th. exactly. Ferrari's back, as one Mauricio Arvabene said all those years ago. We got two cars in the number 50, Antonio Fuoco. Remember him from the days of Formula 2? Those were fun. Miguel Molina and Nicholas Nielsen. And in the 51, Alessandro Pierguidi, James Collado. Yes, good old Ferrari factory man, James Collado. And I love that RJ calls him Italian Jesus in our notes. We all know that can only mean one person. That's Antonio Giovinazzi, the helmet king himself, who unfortunately has also cut his hair, which means he's going to be putting like 4 minute 30 lap times around, because we all know all his strength was in his magnificent mane. So I don't know what Ferrari were thinking. Putting him in the 51, quite frankly. But RJ says below, Ferrari had the fastest car in testing and were fast down the Mulsanne straight. Do they win their first Le Mans since 1965? Or do they haunt it?
Well, I'm in two minds about this. if nothing else, the 499P has proven fast.
It's quick, over, and it looks over good.
Over a lap. Race pace, less so. And I think operationally, AF Corsa are about as bulletproof as they come. Far cry from the Scuderia over in Formula One. Really, they should swap teams. They might actually stop tripping over their own.
I mean, AF Corsa is run by a guy whose last name is Ferrari, but strangely enough, they're not related.
No relation, even though it's in the name. But
just a coincidence.
If only he ran Lamborghinis. That would be a perfect conflict of interest. But yeah, their car's been, I mean, approved in test day that it's a bullet down the straights. My bigger concern is actually on the reliability side, because we've seen this car munch through MGUs in the lead up to this a couple of times. I think on raw pace so far this year, they've been Toyota's closest challenger. But through a mix of, hey, it's a brand new car, these things are going to happen, and not being quite as well drilled as Toyota, they've never really been able to take the fight to them in race trim.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see much difference on that front. I think if you're Ferrari and it's a brand new car, if you can bring it home on the podium, that's great. Anything higher, that's a great first year.
House money.
It's house money that I'm not so sure that they can't cash in on, because there are encouraging signs. And one other big thing that has helped them is that, yes, they got a little bit of a BOP nerf, but it wasn't as big as the Toyota's. And remember when their cars kept suffering in the cold because they didn't have access to tire warmers? Because they couldn't switch on the tires. Well, tire warmers are back for this race, and it will be hot during the day. But if it starts in the wet, that ought to make things very interesting, and the tire warmers will come into play. They've got the people, they got the personnel to get it done. And I cannot stress to you how popular a Ferrari win would be overall. Yes, they've won this class, subclasses, many, many times before in GT racing. That's all well and good, and they'll take that on any day of the week.
They haven't been in the top class in an official capacity since 1974.
My editor-in-chief, Graham Goodwin, was like a year... He does not have cognitive memories of the last time Ferrari has won this race outright.
Yeah. Yeah, 1965, and of course... that was after picking a fight with Ford, and then Ford rammed the entire budget of the United States down their throat.
USA! USA! USA!
It's not been highlighted in mainstream media at all, has it?
Yeah, you know, Ford spent enough money to launch a few Saturn V's at Ferrari.
Yeah, and
to win a dumb race.
Yeah, that's right, and that's why people around the world love to collect Damon Cobras. I think the Ferrari 499P, I think they've got as good a shot as any to win this race on debut. I'm not betting the house on it, but I feel more encouraged. And I know, Cam, you'll probably feel more encouraged about the next manufacturer we're talking about, because it didn't look like it at first, but maybe number 20 could be within reach.
Oh, I guess this is the part where I narrate it. Porsche's back after having been absent from this race in the top class since 2017.
Thanks, Dieselgate.
Thank you, Volkswagen. RIP Polo RWRC. But they're here with four cars, three factory, one privateer, the number five car, driven by Dane Cameron, Michael Christensen, and Fred McAvecky. The number six car, driven by noted Nürburgring Lap 1 specialist Kevin Estra. Andre Lotterer, who is still hunting his first non-Audi overall here.
And hunting a clean Formula E race.
That hunt will come up empty. and noted guy who really shouldn't be allowed at the Nürburgring anymore, Lawrence Vantor. I'm still angry over last year. I'm not going to get over it. They've got a third car crewed by the IMSA boys, run by Felipe Nasr. Remember him in Formula One?
Fun times.
Matthew Jaminet and the Tandy Man. The Tandy Man can, Nick Tandy. And then, of course, the fourth car run by Hertz and Tom Brady team.
Tom Jota. Brady. Yes, that Tom Brady. NFL Hall of Famer, arguably the greatest quarterback of all time, Tom Brady.
Arguably. And that car run by Antonio Felix da Costa, Will the Lad Stevens, and just send fucking sational LMP driver, Ife Yi. I probably butchered that. I did butcher that. It's okay.
Ife Yi. Wonderful That's guy.
Porsche didn't suck on test day.
No, they didn't. The pace was there, thereabouts. Every one of their cars had a chance to sign. I think only the 75 had a troublesome session. They had to change out a brake system components.
Issues.
Yeah.
But there's something just very right about a Porsche top class prototype firing up the straights at this track. And they look good. They said the car feels good. They aren't as far off the pace as they've shown in the WEC races thus far. And at least in the IMSA side of things, this car has certainly come good the last couple races. Six cars leading the championship. If they didn't completely fuck up turn one with both cars, they were probably in good position at Laguna and IMSA.
Whoops.
Mm-hmm. So, is twin number 20 within reach?
I'll tell you, it looked a lot closer than it did after Spa. Because on the WEC side, pace has been a problem. Reliability has been a problem. They blacked out of the bus stop at Spa. They had a power steering issue.
There was reason for that.
Yeah.
An external piece of debris actually hit the car's external kill switch and shut the car off completely.
What?
Well, that'll do it.
So it wasn't actually reliability with the car. Someone just pressed the master kill switch. That's someone being the hand of God throwing a rock at it.
In other words, your car was put out by a unicorn. Grace.
A genuine act of God shut that car off.
Yeah, that reminds me of the Indianapolis 500. What about the tire life? Have you figured out how to manage those rear tires? Because at times it looked tough on the WEC side.
Really on both sides. I mean, again, car looked all right in the test day, but again, I feel like we're the better part of 5 seconds off the real qualifying pace. I don't know how much pace has to play into it. I know Toyota has more to play with. I know Ferrari has more to play with. Porsche too, probably. Cadillac too, probably. We'll get to them later. I would be extremely happy if the Porsches just finished the race, given how much of a certified clusterfuck Daytona was. Thanks, X-Track. If they get a podium, I'm mission complete. I'm super happy. If they win the race, you will never fucking hear the end of it.
You are going to be clear. You're going to be up to cruising altitude about 35,000 feet, helicoptering up in the sky. It's going to be insufferable.
You think RJ blew out your ears on the Indy 500 podcast? We're going to need to redefine the audio limits of Riverside FM.
I was going to say, like, you do not understand the editing that I had to go through during that Indy 500 review. That was
need to ban me from this podcast. Ban me for the week afterwards.
We've done 445 episodes at this point. I don't think we've ever had anyone pop off that loudly over Joseph Newgarden's Indy 500 win. RJ O'Connell, don't ever do that again. Do you understand?
Can I leave you with some other notes?
Sure.
Dan Cameron trying to become America's first overall winner since Davy Jones in 1996, also driving a Porsche. Andre Lauterer trying to join that list of elite four-time winners of this event. I'm surprised he never got it before he left the pro top class the first time. And Nick Tandy, in the third factory Porsche, is in the same garage where the number 19 Porsche 919 was sitting in 2015 when he, Earl Bamber, And some tall German guy who drives for Haas now, I guess, won the race in 2015 when nobody expected to.
Kevin Magnussen. Yeah. No.
How dare you? Yeah, I mean, there's something about the other Porsche at this race in the last few years, and we haven't really mentioned it. Those three factory cars being run by this dude named Roger?
Roger Penske?
Just about the only thing that Roger Penske has never won. He has never won this race. The last real attempt by Roger being in 1971 with a Ferrari, ironically, up against a just overwhelming armada of Porsches. There's something very ironic in that statement. hey, he won Indy this year.
Yeah, and New Garden was no favorite going into that this year. Let me tell you, New Garden was 25-1. I did the digging on this. He was 25-1 to win the 500 on the day of the race itself, given he was 17th. And well, we know how that story ended. Me, Pete, and Arjun
put somebody down. Should we get to our other LMDH manufacturer, Cadillac Racing? This is split up into the two cars operated by Chip Ganassi Racing under the Cadillac Racing name. The Blue Deuce, the number two with Earl Bamber. Hey, we just talked about him. Alex Lynn, driver of noted single-seater acclaim. And Richard Westbrook, just a gritty veteran of sports car racing across multiple categories.
Forever for GM. Mm.
The gold number three of Sebastian Bourdais, Le Mans native, who has won his class but never won overall. Renger van der Zande, you can sing it to the Mario Underworld theme or Casey and the Sunshine Band, it's up to you. And of course, Pancake Fiend and Iceman Scott Ditson as your third guy. Oh, and
the plus one happens to be Scott Dixon.
Plus one's only one of the greatest IndyCar drivers of all time. Okay, good.
And the plus one car is from Action Express Racing, perennial IMSA powerhouse, the number 311 for you fans of late 90s, early 2000s rap rock, Peepo Durrani, Alexander Sims, and Jack Aitken. Cadillac's cars weren't setting eye-opening times in the testing, but they were clocking in a lot of tests. They've been durable. Is that enough?
It's weird to think that in our lifetime, this is actually the second Cadillac Le Mans program.
Yeah.
Only because the last one was so forgettable that just never really came to anything, and then GM killed it as the potential rolled up. With a new car for 2002, and then they just put a bullet in its head at the end of the year. Cadillac, they look fine. But that's really about all I can say about them. They've looked fine.
They look fine.
But they are there. I struggle to actually find a whole lot to say about them, because what is there to say that we haven't said about them in IMSA? They're really bulletproof operationally. Mm-hmm. They've got two cars piloted by your plus one is Scott Dixon, one of the greatest drivers of the modern era. I just don't know if the car has the reliability over a distance, given what we saw in Sebring and with the Action Express car at Daytona. And there is one big Achilles heel to this car that we've seen pretty much everywhere. They're just getting bulldozed down the straight by just about everyone.
Which is strange for a car powered by a large, naturally aspirated V8 engine, which if you love those sounds...
Everything else is turbocharged. Oh my God, the sound. The sound this thing makes is...
You know, it's crazy. It's not even the best sounding car in this race, and we'll get to them in a minute, but...
We'll get to them later. It's... If Cadillac are going to make a play for this race, first of all, again, for anyone in this first year of these new cars, if you get to the end of the race, that's
job well done.
That's job number one done. You need to beat the race first. But if Cadillac is going to make a play at the overall, I think it's going to be part of it being in the rain, because we know Cadillac's cars since they re-entered prototype racing have always been real damn solid in rain. Mm. And there is some predicted for Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
There is.
And on hoping that this car holds together better than everything else around it, as mechanically it's a little bit less complex than all the cars around it.
Yeah. I think
that's all they, I think that's what they have to hang their hat on.
Yeah. Cadillac's time in the early 2000s, it's defined by just they're there, but they're not really presence. This generation with the V Series ZR, I really think that there is something there, but they've got to show me more as practice develops, which I'll know about in the next coming days after we record this, and probably by the time you listen to this episode.
Mm. Oh, I can turn this one around quick. Don't worry about that. I got you, Chiefs. I got you. But
shall we get to
Peugeot?
And I like how in the set list, there's just a man meme with a dead Peugeot at the side of the road.
It's very good. Just man.
I will say Peugeot brought a trophy home today. They won something. They won their pit stop challenge in class.
Woo!
Unfortunately, I think that is just about the only hardware that they are bringing home this way. Look, Peugeot stink. This is the race that this car is built for, the wingless wonder. You wonder how it can get around corners, and really it barely can. Amazingly, in test day, they actually had the best reliability out of all the top class cars.
Yeah. The number 94 of Loic Duval.
Be like.
Loic Duval, Gustavo Menezes, and Nico Müller logged the most laps in car number 94 over both sessions of the test day. The number 93 car, driven by Paul DiResta, Mikkel Jensen, and John Erik Vern, broke down during the morning session.
Oh.
Well, that's about right. Look, this is... I can't even say it's that much of a far cry from the 908 program, because the 908 program was kind of a shit show in its first year, but at least those cars were just eye-wateringly fast.
Mm.
I mean, we've heard some power figures now that you don't need to hide power figures for historic racing cars such as the Peugeot 908.
God, that makes you feel old.
Hang on. So I remember the 908 mostly as a video game fan, because obviously I'm a huge Gran Turismo player, and it's featured in multiple games in that series.
Mm-hmm.
Was the estimated figures that they were pumping out accurate, i.e. around 700 horsepower, or was it even more than that?
Oh, honey, that's the propaganda number.
Well, okay, what's the real number?
According to Richard Bradley, who...
you're getting a taste of the traffic here in Arnage.
It's running the 908 outside.
No, that's far too loud for one of those cars.
Oh yeah,
I miss the whistling diesels. Dre, at full qualifying boost in 2010, they were making 850 horsepower.
Huh?
And they were making 1106 pound feet of torque.
1100 pounds of torque.
That's your diesel for you. That'll get you where you need to go until the connecting rods fly out the side of the motor.
That's enough torque to move a small moon. Like,
it just turns to a Brabus twin turbo Mercedes and laughs.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. Back to the modern age. Look, their reliability was deplorable.
It's not been good ever since they launched the car after Le Mans last year. And while they have reworked the inner workings of the gearbox they've completely torn it down.
RJ, we had a dude like saying goodbye to his wife and kids with
that was Loic Duval.
Loic Duval was like, if this car kills me, tell my wife I love her.
Like Duval was like going out to sea, knowing he might not return.
The quantity of reliability problems all over this car. I would be flabbergasted if these two cars make the flag. Anything beyond that is a win.
If they finish, it should be a tremendous achievement. And I could tell you from public scrutineering out in the town center, which, God, it's crazy to think that this many people would gather just to see cars get pushed through tech inspection, knowing that they're going to have to do this several times over. The locals Love the Peugeot is back. They've fits delivery. It's not that ugly ass gray anymore.
I say it's longer in raw primer anymore. Actually, I really love the livery on it. It's very cool.
It's gorgeous. I love it.
And it's, I like the concept. I would love for this to do well. I've talked with people inside Peugeot and they're not counting. They're really not getting ahead of themselves here. They just want to finish this race and see where everything takes you. But I have heard good things that things are looking up for them.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'll get to that in a minute when we have some downtime. I'd be flabbergasted if they make the finish. If they do, that's a win. If they get any, and look, actually the car's not that slow around here.
Yeah, it's not that slow.
It's not that slow. It's not that fast either. And that's before we get to the fact that, again, we're in the 3:29s. Pole last year was a 3:24. We've got a long way to go. And this is what this car was built for, right?
Right.
This is the race wingless, that this car was built for.
Huge, smooth straights, fast sweeping corners. That's what this car is all about. Driving talent. I think they've got stupendous drivers behind the wheel. Mm-hmm. We know Jev is solid. Loic Duval, one-time lap record holder in the race around this place back during Peugeot's last program. As far as the manufacturers, don't be last and you'll probably be happy.
Well, I can tell you they don't have much competition to beat why don't you introduce Dre, the final two, our privateers in the field.
Privateers. Well, we have Van Wall first and foremost. Yes, that Van Wall, the Floyd Van Wall Racing Team, or as RJ puts in his notes, quote, and I read this here politely, "Fat Gangster's latest scam."
The longtime Le Mans faithful will know them behind the scenes as Bicols.
Oh boy.
You know, the yearly meme of when does the Bicols catch fire, and wherever you got, and how, whoever gets closest on the clock gets a free ice cream, because it was going to happen. You just didn't know when.
Oh boy.
The number four car driven by not Jacques Villeneuve, because he got fired.
He got fired out of nowhere. Apparently, he found out on social media that he'd lost his job. He was given the old Jonian Palmer treatment. He wasn't even told when he was let go. Which, by the way, I know it's Jack, but that's still pretty despicable.
That's Colin's optics for you. Like, I understand
right
that the
child was born, no less.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was ready to joke about, like, hey, endurance racing drivers, don't fuck during September. You might have to miss Le Mans.
Oh, God.
If you do, at least wear a condom.
Oh,
instead of Jacques Villeneuve, we've got a trio of actually some real solid drivers with Tom Dillman, Esteban Gutierrez.
No, not Gutierrez. No. It's Guerrieri, the Argentine.
I completely misread that. Holy shit.
Esteban Gutierrez is in this race, but we'll get to him in a second.
That's what I was thinking. Oh, I'm sorry. And Tristan Vautier, who was other Esteban, as I will now call him, because I'm not even going to try and pronounce that.
Guerrieri.
Did I get it right?
Yes,
close enough.
Okay, Guerrieri. His Indy Lights rival in 2012. This car has been turbo garbage so far. With catastrophic brake failure, its most recent exit from a race.
But at least it's green, and it's got a large, naturally aspirated V8 engine.
Yay!
Yay! Who cares? This car sucks. And they're going to be fighting for the Chambers pot in the top class, I think.
With, oh boy. Oh boy. It's our friend.
Oh God, he's back.
It's our friend and yours. The former Fallon d'Or winner and holder of the Golden Cork. Jim from New York and his team of Glickenhaus Racing. You love it. You love to see it. They're here again to make up the numbers. Where do we even start with Hatman's Ferrari at home?
Hatman's Ferrari at home. You know, Hatman who will say any number of deplorable things about anyone, but don't say it about him or he'll block you on Twitter.
Yeah, pretty much.
Although really, what's that worth in the era of modern Twitter?
No, not much.
He's got two cars. They're blue now.
It's nice.
Actually, well, 708 actually wearing a very funky livery.
Yeah, very colorful.
Driven by Romain Dumas, Olivier Pla, and Ryan Briscoe.
What a team that is, by the way. I mean, holy shit.
Imagine wasting that on this car.
I know!
In the 708 car. And then the 709 car, you actually do have Esteban Gutierrez. That's why it was the... Really, it just blends together with the garbage of these two cars.
Yeah.
Frank Malliot and... Oh, I'm going to butcher this
Nathaniel one. Berton.
Nathaniel Berton.
That wasn't so hard, was it, Cam?
No, I didn't. I looked at it. I'm just like, wait, is it that easy or I'm just being dumb?
No, it really is that easy. Don't worry. We got you. They're here. They exist and they're going to be terrible.
I would say in a battle of loathsome privateers between a scam and
the fat gangster and the hat man.
Oh Lord!
The hat man. That could be a TV show.
That sounds like the most messed up spin-off of Spider-Man you've ever heard, ever. Like,
what would you consider success?
Finish.
Well, finishing hasn't really been a problem for Glickenhaus. The car is, if nothing else, pretty reliable.
A reminder: they were third overall last year.
They were third overall last year. Basically. But they were the last runners, effectively, in class of people running or without massive delays. Mm. Beat the other loathsome privateer, I think, is the big success.
Don't come last.
Don't come last, basically. I think last, honestly, between these two is probably nailed on for the van wall.
That's likely. What a miserable time that is. Should we talk about something cooler?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. France loves the Cuppy car. Entered as this year's Garage 56 innovative car is a heavily modified NASCAR Chevrolet Camaro from Hendrick Motorsports. Yes, that's you've just been bullied by Rick Hendrick Motorsports. Etc. Driven by our friend and yours, IndyCar specialist Jimmy Johnson. Yes, that Jimmy Johnson. Mike Rockefeller. And yes, everyone's third favorite Formula One driver, Jenson Button. It won't fight for a class win and it won't be scored in the final overall classification, but who fucking cares? It's quicker than expected. 2 seconds faster than the quickest GTE car so far in early testing. How cool is this thing?
Oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. Cam, they built a successor to T-Rex.
No, because this car wasn't made illegal the next day. This car wouldn't be allowed in NASCAR.
But it is kind of the similar philosophy of how far can you stretch a NASCAR Cup Series car in terms of like engineering it to its breaking point.
And sticking aero all over it.
I love it.
You know, we have our new Big Mate meme because this thing dwarfs every other car here.
Big Mate.
Hilarious.
And the grid photo that they took earlier today, yes. We were just like, it was buried back in like the fourth or fifth row. And it's just like, where's the NASCAR? Oh, just look for the thing that's towering over everything else.
You know, apparently Valkenhorst Motorsport attempted to break back out the Big Mate for one last go this year, as this is the farewell race for the GTE class.
Mm.
And I have to say, ACO, you killed the man, but not the idea.
The ACO are no fun.
Well, they're fun to let this in.
Oh, yeah.
I will say.
It is fun. excuse me. I don't necessarily expect it to stay ahead of the GTEs. The GTE place has been very slow so far. I expect them to pick it up. Everyone in fear of a last-minute BOP change the week before the race. But it's just so fucking silly and wonderful to see a NASCAR stock car
again
at Le Mans, because this is not the first time this has happened.
1978.
76. God, 76.
I broke that down in my previews.
Dang it, RJ. Yep, 76, we had a Ford... We had a Ford Torino here and a Dodge. Unfortunately, due to the state of gasoline in the world in 1976, the Dodge blew itself up early, and the Ford, well, when you're having to do a few dozen gear changes per lap rather than a few dozen per race, it takes a toll.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully, Hendrick has avoided the fate of the stock cars that came here in 76 because, well, they've engineered this thing basically top to bottom to do the distance. And it's kind
it's
of
got
weird
its own special tires and everything.
Yep. Got its own tires and three real solid drivers. We forget due to his time in IndyCar, but Jimmy Johnson is one of the greatest NASCAR drivers who ever lived.
Yeah.
Mike Rockenfeller. Well, this time, if a GT tries to cut across him, that GT is going to fuck around and find out.
Yeah. By the way, you forget that Mike Rockenfeller was part of the crew that set the all-time distance record when it won in the 2010 24 Hours of Le Mans. Mm.
I didn't forget last year of the big diesel motors. And then was in that car the next year when a GT car sent him into the shadow realm.
And you know who that driven car was driven by? The man responsible for the NASCAR charter system. Thank you, Rob Kaufman.
Fuck you, Rob Kaufman. and Jenson Button, who actually has run here before, back with the BR1 squad a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And
who were they sponsored by? Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, yeah. World Events, TM. I really hope this car sticks the landing. Of course, it's so different to everything else. It's been very popular with everyone at the track. I hope this car finishes. Very much so.
I do too. Like, this thing is incredible. Like, Jenson Button said this. You think the Cadillac sounds awesome? This thing, it'll wake your neighbors, man. It was physically tiring him just from the sound. He had to get new earplugs. It's so much fun. Like, yeah, and they're doing the NASCAR pit stops motor. Too.
Because remember a NASCAR motor. A NASCAR engine is a 5.8 liter naturally aspirated pushrod engine built to the same standards as a Formula One engine. With that same level of technological push in every aspect of it. These things rev to the moon, and they make a lot of noise.
Can't wait. For me, this is what motorsport's all about. Pushing the boundary, seeing what you can do with the technology around you. And I'm delighted that the ACO lets innovative vehicles take part as a showcase. It reminds me of Estoril 2006 in MotoGP when Ilmor rolled up with what would become the prototypes for MotoGP, and just seeing it out there. And it was an open garage. Anybody could walk in. They could ask questions. You could look under the hood. I love that about motorsport, and I love this entire project. I hope it finishes. I hope it finishes well. And it's just another great showcase of what makes Le Mans so special. Love it.
I can't wait. They've had to put a barn door wing on it, but I cannot wait to see this thing drop the hammer down Mulsanne.
This thing's carrying so... It's actually not all that fast down the Mulsanne because it's carrying so many spoilers.
Yeah.
Where it's actually killing everyone is like on traction events because it's so heavy. Mm. And because it's got so much power, for the first half of the straight, it's cooking the GT cars.
That is crazy. There's a lot of stuff to get into in this race. There's two whole other classes. There's a new safety car procedure where, okay.
Actually, Lamar's I'd love to get into that right now because since 2010, I believe it's been, there's been a three safety car rule at Le Mans. And because you are not allowed to catch the next safety car queue, you actually have to wait for the next one to pick you up. If you pit at the wrong time and a yellow comes out, it destroys your race.
Yeah.
You lose a minute to a minute and a half through no fault of your own. and there's nothing you can do about it. Because, I mean, there is one cardinal rule about this race. Stay out of the pits.
Yeah.
Fuel, tires, all the way through the race. Stay out of the pits. If you get held for another minute and a half in the pits, procedurally, there's nothing you can do. They fixed that for this year, where now they're going to try and bring the entire field up into one massive safety car queue at the end of a safety car by adding in merging, wave arounds, and dropbacks into the existing safety car system. There is a downside to this. It does take about a half hour to get a 60 plus car grid all together from three groups into one in an organized fashion. But I'd much rather take that than watch a intriguing battle like we had a couple years ago in GT basically get blown up because a car decided to go for an undercut.
Yeah, it's nasty. I don't think it's, I mean, I know motorsport generally speaking isn't fair, but it can be fairer than what's come before it, certainly. And I think this is absolutely the right move.
And also to that end, you know, it's very rare for a safety car to come out Le Mans. They will typically deal with some mild to moderate incidents with slow zones anyway, where they put one section of the track under a full course yellow. And also, like, yeah, it's 30 minutes. That's 1/48th of a 24-hour race. You've got time. If it means that we actually have subclass battles that have juice by the end of it, I'm okay with it.
Absolutely. Like, it's a 24-hour race. We expect tons of yellow. We expect slow zones. We expect to be big pauses in the action. I'd much rather you take 15-20 minutes longer to get a race going again under green in a 24-hour endurance race, and everybody has as good a chance as possible of being able to win, rather than just chance screwing somebody over like that. I'd much rather take the time. I mean, that's the whole point. It's time. Take the time and let's balance the books as best as we can, rather than have it be decided often by timing, which I think is nonsense. So I'm all for it.
Yeah. A lot of other stuff in this. I mean, Corvette Racing, you know, they've been a singular factory team for so many years, and this is it. This is their last ride before Corvette Racing becomes Audi Sport, customer support, and all that stuff. Lots of LMP2 teams with ties to future hypercar brands. Awesome drivers. You have five women trying to win their class for the first time in 48 years. I don't think we got time to get into all of it because my time is very limited, because I'm sure a lot of people want to get back into the garage. Because I'm so who wins?
I'll let you go first.
Me?
The self-proclaimed sports car newbie. Even though at this point you've actually watched more sports cars than a lot of so-called sports car fans.
I know. It's like you guys have annoyingly corrupted me into the world of endurance racing. And like, I look, for what it's worth, I've thoroughly enjoyed the experience. I am still a newbie. There is still so much for me to learn about the very nature of this. But
for those who aren't in our Discord, we actually introduced them to the Le Mans movie a couple weeks ago, which, if you haven't seen it and you like cars, much story in there, but the cars are just tremendous.
No story is, like, nobody watches, like, the Fast and Furious movies for an adequate plot. I mean,
Fast and Furious movies have a plot these days. I'm pretty sure it's just Tom Toretto catching cars on the roof of another car.
It's all about family.
It's all about family. I just smelt $10 million. Anyway, no, I was going to say, for me, and I'm speaking from the heart, they're the team I grew up with. I want a Ferrari win. I want a Ferrari overall win. And I've just got a feeling it would all come together for the number 51. Pellegrini, Collado, Gio. I'll be so happy for Gio, given his F1 career never quite worked out how it should. It was a talented driver, I ain't no mistake. And like, they're getting both Ferrari team. I'll be happy with either Ferrari. I've just Give me a Ferrari win, but I'm thinking 51. I'm gonna pin my
of the
my,
two,
my flag
I'd
to the
say
mast.
That's the right pick.
I think the 51 Ferrari. Just that's me. What do you reckon, Cam?
My endurance racing brain tells me
seven.
Tells me eight. Because the 7 Toyota always has a cartoon anvil fall on it every fucking year. Even though I would be over the moon with another Coach K win. But my heart, there's just something right about it going up these straights on this hallowed ground.
Which one?
Give me, for the 75th birthday, give me number 75 and the IMSA boys and the Tandy Man.
The Tandy Man. The Tandy Man can, because he races it with love and makes the race feel good.
I know I'm wrong. And that's okay. This is an entirely subjective pick. Objective pick, it would be number 8. But subjective, my pick, 75.
This is the Le Mans 24 Hours in its 100th year. Fuck yep. The endurance racing brain. Go with your heart, damn it.
That's right.
And again, if Porsche rolls up with number 20, you're going to have to ban me from the show for at least a month.
Well, for me, my endurance racing heart feels that... Call me biased, call me what you will, but this is not the same Toyota that threw away victory at every opportunity. This is a much different Toyota team. They are the benchmark. And for me, I think for my Conway, Jose Maria Lopez, who has never caught a damn break from us, and for Kamui Kobayashi,
never will.
A second Le Mans win would really cement their legacy. They already have two world titles, but I'm sure they want to catch up to Blamey's accomplishments. Well, I think the Toyota 7 wins Le Mans.
This is the same as the other, you know, the other leg of the Triple Crown that we devote so much time to on this show. This race is what you're here for.
Absolutely.
Endurance racing championships, those are all well and good. Le Mans is a piece of the Triple Crown for a reason. In my opinion, when it's good, it's the greatest race in the world.
Yeah.
If I were to pick my favorite ever race from any category, it would be a toss-up between two races in 2015. I know Dre knows the other one, but the other one would be the 2015 edition of this race.
It's an incredible race. Even I know that.
And one day we'll all sit down and watch the two endurance racing titans just beat each other with increasingly large chairs. But... while I don't necessarily love how the ACO went about the BOP change, given they said one thing and then did quite another, I hope, if nothing else, we get a good race in the top class.
This race has been hyped for so long. I want it to deliver. I want to believe that after a rough period for the World Endurance Championships top class, that we're finally back in another golden age.
Let's hope the very best. We wish everybody a safe and plentiful race. May they all get back safely. We all know this is also one of the most dangerous races in the world. Let's never forget that, too.
I mean, and this year, of course, I know RJ's seen it in person, but the 10th anniversary of the last passing we had at Le Mans with Alan Simonson at the start of the 2013 race. So, to echo what Dre said, this track is one of those giants. It will reach out and touch you if you're not careful. I hope everyone comes back safe.
Indeed. Indeed. And that was our preview for the greatest, for me, the greatest race of them all, the 24 Hours of Le Mans. You could catch it all over the internet. I think for us Brits, it'll be all over Eurosport. They have an incredible team. I've actually heard of our friend and yours from F1, Alex Jakes, will be fronting that coverage and I think he's the best commentator in the world right now for motorsport. So delighted for that. So yeah. Catch it on British Eurosport over here. It's good. They have all 24 hours live dedicated coverage across their two channels. So if you're in the UK like me, please watch along, support Le Mans. It's a fantastic exhibition.
Support what I'm doing over at dailysportscar.com and racer.com is great.
Absolutely. Please back RJ. If you
stay up for all 24 hours for me, because I'm not going to be able to. I'm going to be working the afternoon of the Saturday, but the Sunday I have off, I'll be able to watch the finish.
I've got a weekend off from the confines of WTF1, so they're gonna let I'll be cooking on the Discord. For that all weekend long. I really am genuinely looking forward to this and having no one in the actual journalism world bother me for a weekend. So I'm really looking forward to that. RJ, have a fantastic time, my friend, over there. Enjoy it, savor it, report back with your findings next week. We have a lot of motorsport to get through this week as well. We'll be talking about the Spanish Grand Prix as well next time out with me and Cam. We'll be there for that and for IndyCar. There's a recurring theme, beatings. Beatings be the order of the day across last Sunday. Max Verstappen dominating the Spanish Grand Prix with a Grand Slam victory, 24-second win, and I was going to save this fact for the actual episode, but I'll say it now. Max Verstappen has now led the last 155 consecutive laps in F1 at the moment.
Is that good?
You know, I think the solution, if you haven't seen the video, it's very wholesome, which wholesome content with Max is quite rare. You know, we should just have Penelope slamming a stuffed animal into his face midway through a race in an actual event, rather than just his sim racing endeavors.
Just to balance the books a little bit, because it's getting a bit overpowered at the moment, quite frankly. It's this dominance, you know, hits different.
The RB19 is so powerful it infected Apple's keynote yesterday.
Oh, that's a thing. And of course, we'll have IndyCar's brand new Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix, which was won by a Honda. Isn't that wonderful? And Alex Palou, Jesus fucking Christ, Alex Palou is on fire.
Maybe the most tense domination of a race, if you really think about it.
Yeah.
Well, given that we kept having cautions because the rest of the field decided to drive like a bunch of clown asses.
Yeah, we had five restarts in that race, and Alex Palou survived four of them to still lead 74 laps and win. Alex Palou is on fucking fire at the moment. He is.
Rinus VK is still dead to me. Because it should have been better than this.
We'll talk
all
about
of that and more.
All that and more in the next two episodes over the next week or so on Motorsport 101. Do check them out. Me and Cam will be there to break all that down over the next time. Like I said, RJ, have a great time out there. Support him at Daily Sports Car. Support him at racer.com. And have a fucking good one, big man. And say hi to the rest of the team over there for us as well. And pass on our thanks for freeing up the bunk beds. It's a very wholesome and tender heterosexual time.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Guys being dudes talking cars. And one more time, thank you to everyone who's been listening. 400 appearances on this podcast is quite frankly ridiculous. And I'm so glad that so many of you are still listening in. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to put this together every week. And long may it continue. Here's to the next 400. Until next time, I've been Dre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell and Cam Buckley. That's something we'll get back for the centenary of the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Thanks for watching. Sayonara.
Au revoir, y'all.
Fate of the universe on the line. Give me Nick Tandy.